Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reeder. My guest today is an expert on presidential assassinations and threats. Dr. Ronald Fineman is on the faculty of Florida Atlantic University, and he's the author of Assassinations, Threats, and the American Presidency, from Andrew Jackson to Barack Obama. Dr. Fineman, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, we're glad to have you. So let me just ask you a very basic question to start off with. How did you get the idea to write a whole book on presidential assassinations and threats?
All right. Well, I guess you could say it started when I was in college, and I was a freshman at Queens College at the City University of New York. I had to write a term paper for the English course. And I chose the Lincoln assassination. And then the year after that was the Kennedy assassination. And, you know, the whole subject of assassination has always interested me. I was doing lectures for years for senior citizen groups down here in South Florida for a number of years, which was noticed, I guess, because it was advertised online. And in 2013, Roman Littlefield found me at FAU and said, "We notice you do these lectures on presidential assassinations. Would you like to write a book?" They came to me, and I knew who they were, but I didn't actually, I never, you know, associated with them. So it was very pleasant, and I had been retired already. So I was only teaching part-time. I did not have full-time anymore, thank goodness. And so I spent 2 years, 2013 to 2015, getting it all done and ready for publication. And it came out in 15, and then in paperback in 17.
Great. Well, so let me just ask you some questions about assassinations and assassination attempts generally. Then we'll get into some more specifics. And of course, we'll talk about the current issue with former President Donald Trump. But first of all, politically, have assassination attempts tended to help or hurt a presidential candidate or president? Or does it depend on the particular situation?
I think in general, when a person survives, I think it gives sympathy to them, which is good, certainly. You know, of course, the ones who were killed, it helps to make them martyrs, particularly Lincoln and Kennedy.
Yeah, I want to come back to that.
And McKinley, they all are martyrs, obviously. And the ones who were shot, like Theodore Roosevelt, when he was a former president, was shot in 1912. He became more of a hero to many. So I think overall, it's a positive, I hate to say, but it's a positive thing if you survive it or if you're not hurt.
Well, it seems like that's the case currently, for the most part. You've anticipated in all of those presidents that you mentioned all the questions I'm going to ask you in the first half of the interview. But I one you didn't mention and I wanted to ask you about was Gerald Ford had several attempts on his life. And
in 17 days.
Yeah. And I can remember the Republican campaign for his election using that actually in a commercial. But it wasn't clear to me then that it necessarily helped him that much. Can you speak about that one?
Well, I don't think it helped him because he was running against the former California governor, Ronald Reagan, and the two assassination attempts were in California, ironically, where he was campaigning in September 75. He did end up, of course, being the nominee by less than 100 delegate votes. But Reagan was not thrilled about him, and the conservative wing of the party, I don't think, backed him fully, even though he picked Bob Dole to replace Nelson Rockefeller to please them. But I think Ford had the problem that he had become president not by the death of the president, but by resignation and being appointed under the 25th Amendment. So I do think that it caused problems in that regard. Mm. But Ford, I have to say, I think it's interesting that he, like Trump, had two threats close together, very close. You know, and in the case of Trump, 2 months, but in the other case, 2.5 weeks. So that stands out about both of them, you know, in a way that's interesting.
Yeah. And then you mentioned Theodore Roosevelt, and I did want to ask you about him. And as you mentioned, you know, he was delivering this long speech and he got shot, and then he just paused for a minute and he showed the crowd the bullet hole in his coat and said, "I've been shot."
He was bleeding a little bit. Yeah.
He was bleeding a little bit. Yeah. And then he continued apparently to speak for quite some time afterwards.
80 minutes. And he said, "I'm as fit as a Boo Moose," because he was running the Boo Moose Party candidate, the Progressive Party of 1912.
Yes. So I would think in that case, you know, one of the themes of his presidency and his political identity and his life was this theme of strength and courage, you know, the strenuous life, the man in the arena. I would think then that moment just sort of came together and underlined that persona that he was sending out to folks.
Yes, and he was very popular as a former president. And although he couldn't win because he was on a third party line, he ended up second in electoral right. votes and popular votes, the only time a third party has ever done that. But I always tell my students, you might be indeed ending up second, but you're never going to win on a third party line. But he came the closest with six states and 88 electoral votes.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this other question. It seems that you already mentioned this, but when presidents or candidates are killed, when they are assassinated, sometimes they become martyrs, you know, and Abraham Lincoln comes to mind immediately, John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy as a candidate.
Yes.
And even as a potential presidential candidate, Huey Long in Louisiana. But
and I write about them.
Yeah, yeah.
And also George Wallace. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But you mentioned McKinley and Garfield being martyred as well. Now, that's interesting because I am not deeply into that history as you are, but when I think of the historical treatment of McKinley's assassination, I see it as being primarily remembered for giving us the Roosevelt presidency rather than martyring McKinley. And for Garfield, the main thing that I remember in reading about it is that it's remembered as being an example of bad medical care because ultimately that's what killed him. But I don't know if you had any comments about that.
Well, with Garfield, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that as we look back, he seemed like he was a person who, hard to be certain, that seemed to be a real leader, that many scholars think that he would have been the star figure of the presidency after Lincoln and before T.R. had he lived. And he was cut off after only a few months, and that was tragic. So that's why he's remembered that way. And the fact is, his death did lead to the civil service reform we call the Pendleton Act of 1883, which is a very important moment, certainly. So in that sense, I think it mattered. And in the case of McKinley, as I tell my students, if things had been different, we would never even know who Theodore Roosevelt was, other than he was governor of New York, because McKinley's first term vice president was Garrett Hobart. And people say, who the hell was Garrett Hobart? And the answer is he was VP and very close to McKinley and actually was considered an activist vice president. But he had heart troubles and he died in 1899. And therefore, in 1900, McKinley needed someone else to be his running mate. And it ended up being T.R. And of course, fate would have it, he'd end up in the White House. But he might have been forgotten if it wasn't for the situation that developed. So while they're not as famous as Lincoln and Kennedy, I think that, you know, there's much more attention lately to, you know, to understand their significance. And also that under McKinley, we, of course, gained territory in the Spanish-American War. And also took over the Philippines, which is criticized. But the point is, these are major moments in American history.
Hmm. You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Florida Atlantic University professor Ronald Fineman. He's the author of Assassinations, Threats, and the American Presidency, From Andrew Jackson to Barack Obama. Are there any, do you think, general rules or tendencies on the political effects of successful assassinations in a democracy? Any patterns that you saw looking over time?
Well, I think in the case of Lincoln, I think that it helped to promote a Republican Party that continued to promote what he believed in. There was a very radical party in the 1870s, you know, promoting civil rights and all that. Then, of course, it backed away from it. But then Garfield was moving in that direction again in 1881 when he was killed. And after that, the Republican Party seemed to have abandoned that situation. Now, in the case of John F. Kennedy, I think it helped to lead to Lyndon Johnson's accomplishments
Absolutely.
As president. He was great, but I think Kennedy's death really helped inspire the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, and a lot of other things. So I think they had an impact, yes.
Mm-hmm. And now, switching over to the current situation with former President Trump, there's been a lot of writing about this particular topic, but do you think the Do you personally think the current state of heated rhetoric has had anything to do with the assassination attempts on him?
Yes, and I'm very worried about it because, you know, I think back to 1968 with Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King and, you know, and all that. And I just worry that we are going to have tragedy, and I hope we don't. But I am very worried whether it's Trump or it's Kamala Harris or vice presidents or even just people running for office. The members of Congress are under much greater threats than they've ever been. I mentioned to my students in class today that in the 1850s, we had the same kind of mentality, and it led to the Civil War. And I'm worried about it, yes.
Has there ever been an attempt or an actual assassination that has lowered the temperature of the rhetoric, where the public has taken notice of an attempted assassination and said, hey, you know, all of us need to reset here?
Not really that I can think of. No, I don't think so, no.
Doesn't seem to be happening now either, as far as I can tell.
No, I mean, we had a very high pitch of partisan rhetoric and a lot of it very, very violence oriented. And it's very disturbing. It's very worrisome. You know, I don't like it and I wish it would stop. But right now, we're in the heat of a campaign, and we've always had it, but I think it's a little more elevated than it often has been.
Yeah, that's my impression too. Well, a different kind of question here, but given it, I think it's probably the case that assassins often have mental health issues, and
yes,
and, you know, and they and they become obsessed.
One exception, John Wilkes Booth, it was not mental. It was political about the Civil War, but everybody else is mental. I also want to make a point that I thought about, that this most recent person who apparently was trying to assassinate Trump is 58 years old. And that's like, what? This is not the way it is. All assassins are 20s or 30s. Only exception was the one woman who tried to kill Ford was in her 40s. So it's unusual. Somebody at age 58 being involved, when it's always young men, and usually it's men, 20s and 30s. The only women are the two people who tried to kill Ford. But this man is so much older than even those two women. You know, it's very odd and strange.
Yeah, that is strange. I hadn't thought about that. Well, what I did want to ask you about that, given that these assassins do have mental health issues, is that I'm a little surprised then why former presidents, at least those who are not actively campaigning, that why they aren't targeted more, why people don't get obsessed with them for whatever, you know, reasons that are in their head. And, you know, I can't remember hearing much about that. And I can't think of one example, in fact, that I'm aware of where,
well,
you know,
if former President George H.W. Bush was threatened after he was out of office, as I report, you know, and Obama has always had death threats. We just don't hear much about it, but he had more death threats than anybody has had since Lincoln. And so a lot of it's just now reported, but I think all former presidents have to deal with the fact that there are people who want to become notorious by trying to get a chance to, you know, to harm them. And it's a tough situation because there's always a lot of bitterness and anger by people who don't like what a president has said or done in office.
You're listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Ronald Fineman. He's on the faculty of Florida Atlantic University. He's also the author of Assassinations, Threats, and the American Presidency, From Andrew Jackson to Barack Obama. And we've been discussing his book and also the assassination attempts on former President Donald Trump. Ronald, you mentioned before the break Barack Obama, and it doesn't surprise me that he would have had the most death threats since Abraham Lincoln, given that he was the first African-American president and the state of racial politics in this country. It's kind of a dark question I'm going to ask you, but were you surprised that he survived 8 years, given your, you know, given what you study?
I don't know. I've never thought of it that way. I didn't want to think negatively, but I will say that the one time which I mentioned in 2014, when Omar Gonzalez got into the White House, Secret Service problems, was wandering around the White House. They weren't home, the family, but he was wandering around and they found him inside. And it's like, how could this happen? And it has created the issue even more now. The Secret Service is not doing its job, and it might be partly money, partly staff, but it's a big crisis, particularly now after what's happened with Donald Trump. But I have to say that I think there's a lot of luck involved, but I think that always is. But the Secret Service used to be seen as better and more efficient than it is right. It has been in the last 10 or 15 years.
Mm. I remember with Obama, David Gergen being visibly anxious when the Obamas got out of the limousine and walked up Pennsylvania Avenue in his first inauguration. It was interesting to see that on air live. You mentioned that the strangeness of this most recent person who was 58 years old. And I wanted to ask you, is there a shared profile of the presidential assassin? In particular, is it different in important respects from, say, a mass shooter or a serial killer?
Interesting. I've never thought about that. But I think a lot of it is there is a political connection, but also a feeling of wanting to be noticed and remembered. And they think if they can get a pot shot at a president, that they are remembered forever, which they are. They certainly are in the books forever, the record books. I just think that that there's always anger over either what presidents have done or what they represent. And that's why, and also also internationally, I mean, we have foreign governments who would love to, you know, get our leadership. It's amazing it hasn't happened. You know, I didn't like even to think about it, but, you know, it's the way things are today with modern weaponry and technology. It's like horrifying. How do you protect the president, you know, and his whole family and the vice president and all these people? It's very, very difficult.
Yeah, you mentioned that, and I'm reminded of the musings that John Kennedy engaged in, you know, right before he was killed, that, you know, that he was saying, you know, anybody can really kill a president if they're willing to die for it. It's really impossible to completely protect them. It sounds like that's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, I want to also make a point of interest about Jimmy Carter, who's going to be reaching 100 right, 2 weeks from today. It's amazing. It's wonderful. Whatever you think about him, he, in a way, caused a, quote, problem, end quote. And you might say, what do I mean by a problem? He's the one that decided he's going to step out of the limousine and walk. Yes. Walk to his inauguration. And ever since, it's happened. And it's all because of him, initially. It was like, what is he doing?
I remember that. He and Rosalind holding hands, walking up Pennsylvania Avenue. That's right. Yeah. Well, I'm going to go back to the two would-be assassins of former President Trump. You mentioned that the second one, quite a bit older than the usual profile.
The other
profile.
One was 21. The first one
right.
was 21.
Yeah. Yeah, and the second one, 58. Other than that age, as far as what we know so far, which is limited, are these two assassins any different from sort of the standard profile?
I don't know. I'm not really sure. It's hard to say. I would think they basically have, I don't, you know, the first assassin, attempted assassin, the one who was killed, we don't even really know that much about what his politics were. So right. It's hard to say. We're too early, unfortunately, I think, to be able to say. But I've had some people suggest I write another addendum, another chapter on 14 to 24 with all these threats that have come since, because my book ended in 14, so 2014. Right. So maybe I should do more research on it, but I really don't know how to answer that.
That's okay. Yeah, no, it's interesting. Well, you alluded to this in the first half of the program. Wanted to give you a chance to talk about maybe some other examples regarding this, but the way that history and the paths of history in American politics can really kind of depend on whether these presidents or candidates survive or don't survive these attempts. You know, I think you write about FDR too. So tell us about that.
Yeah, Franklin D. Roosevelt was shot at in Miami, Florida on February 15th, 1933, which was a total of 17 days before his inauguration, my gosh. And the person who was shooting at him, his hand was knocked by someone else in the crowd. And instead, the mayor of Chicago, who was there sitting next to him, Anton Cermak, ended up being shot and dying, you know, not immediately, but dying later. And there's a famous story even about that, that FDR went to see Cermak in the hospital, and Cermak said, better me than you. And I said, boy, is that an unbelievable thing to say. And then he ended up passing away. But if he had been killed, and this was just a couple of weeks before his inauguration, at the height of the Great Depression, we would have had Vice President-elect John Nance Garner, former Speaker of the House from Texas, very conservative, and a person who actually resisted and disagreed with almost everything that FDR did with the New Deal. So if he had been president, we would not have had the New Deal. Now, some would say that would have been good if you have a different viewpoint, but others would say the New Deal did a lot of good. So it was a real turning point that Roosevelt was saved.
Well, and certainly Roosevelt's leadership during World War II as well.
Yes.
Interesting. So I don't know if you can shed some light on this, but I was wondering if there are any shared effects on the presidents and the presidential candidates who survived these active assassination attempts, or do each of these people process these things in their own individual ways? I mean, for example, after the first assassination attempt on former President Trump, he did seem like a changed person, at least for a few days. And then he went back to sort of his usual rhetorical style. But
yes,
have you seen in the past anybody that really sort of where this was a turning point for them and their way that they thought about things in their life?
I think Ronald Reagan, when he was shot in 1981, I think it definitely had a transformational effect on him. And I think that it changed his whole outlook on world affairs. And he was willing to, over time, not right away, to indeed make agreements with the Soviet Union's leadership. And I think Reagan thought that he had been given another chance on life and that he really tried to do the best that he thought in his way should things should be done.
And he had one of the all-time famous quotes afterwards with his wife, I believe.
Yes. He asked the insurgents, "Are you Republicans?"
Oh, that's right. But then he said, didn't he say to his wife, like, "Honey, I forgot the duck," or something like that?
Yeah, and also, "I forgot to duck." But he also said, "Are you Republicans?" And he said, "We're all Republicans today," the insurgents said.
So
he was a charming guy. I mean, that's one thing about him. He was just great in that regard. He was very charming and charismatic.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Well, we've got about 5 minutes left or so. And I wondered if there were other aspects of what you delved into with your book or particular stories that you think our listeners would be interested in knowing. I wanted to leave some time for you to kind of pick what you think are some of the most, as you were researching this, I'll ask it this way. As you were researching this, you obviously had prior knowledge and, you know, you were giving these lectures and you had thought about this, but then, as you said, you know, you got more serious about this over the course of a couple of years and wrote the book. Was there anything that really just surprised you as you were looking into this? Like, wow, you know, I didn't think of that, or I really would have never known that.
I don't think so. As you know, as you're asking me without time to really think it through, I did want to bring up about that. My book also covers presidential candidates. So
right.
I do have a chapter on Huey Long and on George Wallace and on Robert Kennedy. And the George Wallace thing is interesting, that Arthur Bremer, of course, shot and paralyzed, Wallace for life. But he was actually seeking out the possibility of killing Nixon instead at that point. You know, it was 1972. And then, of course, Nixon was threatened by Samuel Bick, I think it's Bick, who was planning to hijack a plane from Baltimore Airport and hit the White House in early 74. That's like 9/11 before 9/11.
Right.
It's a weird story. He didn't get off the ground, but he was also a threat. So Nixon had a number of those threats. But I mean, there was, and also John Hinckley was stalking Jimmy Carter before he shot Ronald Reagan. So that's interesting also.
Yeah.
But these are just interesting situations. Sometimes it's almost like not so much the person, it's rather they just want to be noticed and they don't care who they're killing or who they're assaulting. So it's just very interesting.
Well, it reminds me of the first assassin of former President Trump, I believe, also had the schedule of Kamala Harris. And
I think Joe Biden also.
Yeah.
I would say Kamala Harris needs much more protection than anybody, probably, because she's revolutionary, just like Barack Obama was, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Very scary, you know, not an easy life. And having a husband who's Jewish, with all the anti-Semitism that still exists, doesn't help either, you know.
Right. So, you mentioned Huey Long, and I've been doing a little bit of reading about him recently. And one of the things that struck me was that he was pretty serious about running for president when he was killed. And
he wasn't announcing yet, but he was about to announce.
Yeah. Yeah. And had a following and, you know, and represented kind of the, the more radical left wing of the progressive movement at that time. If you thinking about history, if he had survived that or had never been shot at in the first place, do you think he could have really challenged Franklin Roosevelt, or would be kind of a footnote to history?
I don't think in 1936 he could have, but the theory was he was looking ahead to 1940. And the thing about Long is he seems to be on the left in a way, but in a way he's also, with his stormtroopers, a fascist on the right. He's like a mix of both. You know, it's a little scary. And I think he was promising impossible things. Every man a king, and everybody would have a set amount of income. So it sounds socialist in quotes, but it also has fascist tendencies to it at that time that a lot of people on the right, I think, would have found him appealing. And he was appealing to a lot of those groups on the right, like Gerald L.K. Smith and others like that. So Dr. Townsend and others. So he was a scary character. He really was. But so was George Wallace. But George Wallace, after he was shot, transformed himself, changed his view on civil rights. It was amazing transformation, you know, in his later life. And he was even got reelected governor of Alabama years later as the so-called, quote, liberal.
Yeah. So, though he may be the best example then of, you know, the transformational moment.
Yes.
From that. Yeah. And you mentioned Huey Long and the fascist tendencies. One of the things I was struck by was the fighting out in the street between the armies that were controlled by Long and the armies by the opposition. It was really quite striking in Louisiana to read about that.
And ironically, it might have been his own stormtroopers who killed him by accident or purposely. It's still not clear, you know, what happened. It was blamed on somebody who was killed right away, but, you know, a medical doctor. But who knows? You know, it's one of those things we still don't really know the truth after 100 years almost.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. This was dark but fascinating, Ronald. And that was Ronald Fineman. And again, his book is titled Assassinations, Threats, and the American Presidency, From Andrew Jackson to Barack Obama. Dr. Fineman, thanks again for taking the time to speak to me.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, is hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio. Assistant producer is Jacqueline Witwicky, and the program is edited by Mark Lefoner. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program and hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.